6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce. Joined virtually, as always, by the hoping it's going to rain, Anna Forsyth at A4Sy03. Welcome, Anna.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, I mean, I think, like all British Columbians, watching the kind of climate and that kind of situation unfold with growing concern, and I think the province could certainly use some more rain. To help out the fires, to dissipate the smoke, it would just be nice if the lower mainland could catch a break.
Yeah, there was a game show from way back where it was Big Bunny, No Whammies.
Okay.
And
that was the name of the show?
No, that's like what people would say. And a whammy was a little red creature that then ended your run, but you always wanted big money. And in this particular case, big rain, no lightning.
Yes, please. Yeah, actually, there was some pretty bad thunderstorms in London over the weekend, and my dad was in a football stadium watching Arsenal draw with Fulham, and I think he was getting pretty nervous, not just about what was happening on the pitch, but being in a big metal structure with 60,000 people outside.
Yeah, well, we frequently see it with Major League Soccer, because of where the season is, in a lot of the teams in the Midwest, will have like, due to a weather delay, and it's like, well, you're watching on TV, it looks fine, but like supercell storms are coming in, and they're like, yep, this land is flat except the stadium and metal structure that's sticking out of it. So it's
lightning's going to find the quickest way to the ground. So yeah. Yeah. I was at a cricket game this summer when their players got taken off for lightning. I did not see the lightning, so I wasn't that worried, and cricket seems slightly less terrifying, more open, more grass, but yeah, that's always a bit worrying.
Yeah. I mean, not that we'd be out there with bottles trying to capture the lightning, but if you ever wanted to see lightning in a bottle, simply follow Friedman and watch him have a conversation with Petey, and then everything happen on Canucks Twitter as a result. Pure lightning. We're going to get into that, obviously, on this weekend's or week's show, not weekend, week's show. Talk a little bit about some things as it leads into the Canucks season. We still don't know who the captain happens to be. And sports sucks, just in general. You've heard us whine and complain and moan and bemoan because this is what people seem to think it is. I simply think it's us spitting facts and trying to beg and plead for change. We're going to talk more about why sports sucks in the F word. But without further ado, we got to get there first. And to do that, we must rewind. So what do we want to talk about first? The PD conversation with Friedman or the center of the universe re-signing Austin Matthews?
The center of the universe? Yeah, I don't know which makes sense. They're both kind of intertwined, I guess, but it all revolves around... how does this affect the Leafs? How does this affect the Canucks? Austin Matthews signed for like 4x13.5, correct? 13.25. Yeah, so a lot of money, not a huge term. Like, as regards to Toronto, it seems to make a lot of sense, right? Like, they've got that kind of window. They've got three players getting paid more than 10 million a year. They've got to, like, you know, now is the time. And, yeah, does that kind of time frame makes sense for Vancouver. Maybe not so much, but maybe it makes sense for Patterson.
Well, okay. I mean, the sort of compare the two, I get why a comparison were to exist. But Matthews' previous deal was slightly different than Petey's current deal. I'm not going to deny that Petey is worth big money. But if we're suggesting that AM34 is setting the Petey target, one, I don't think the Canucks can afford it.
Nope.
Whether it's valid or not, I don't know how the Vancouver Canucks make that work. I mean, you're just looking at like next season as it stands right now. The Canucks will have a whole series of holes in their lineup with no money to spend if they drop it all on Petey. Now, that said, Petey will get paid. However, he also is a restricted free agent. His means to negotiate is limited. That's not to suggest he can't force the issue and find a way to make a deal happen somewheres. I think with what Toronto needs, Austin Matthews provides, the ingredients, whether or not that'll be sufficient to get them, out of the first round of the playoffs. Who knows? But Toronto needs that success. Could you imagine if they were to have Austin Matthews leave? Like, the city would crater. Yeah. It would be a black hole, and it would consume itself and the rest of the world. Because that's what happens when the center of the universe becomes a black hole.
Yeah, I mean,
is the center of the universe a black hole? Like, I'm not scientific enough to know.
Don't ask me science stuff. Please do not. This is Toronto's time. Yeah, as you say, will it be sufficient? I don't know. But, they've got one more. William Nylander's not signed after this year. Most of their defense isn't signed after this year. So, this is the time, right? They've got to, whilst they have a lot of players on sort of middling contracts, you would think this is the time. It's the Canucks' time? No. And, Canucks can't pay, and they can't keep paying people like it is their time. JT's on $8 million a year till the end of time. Petey's gonna want a substantial raise on that. Is JT Miller, he's a second-line center. But, whether he can even keep his center role is, debatable. So you've got to think Petey looks at that and just thinks, well, what am I worth, on the cap compared to that, compared to JT, compared to other players? Whether the cap goes up next year, probably a couple years before it goes up.
Yeah, it's not going to go up. Petey money.
At least 2 years before makes a jump. But yeah, you've got to think he wants a chunk of that. He is the guy. Him and Quinn Hughes are the guys.
Well, for now.
For now. But,
I'm not trying to, throw cold water on this, but that's somewhat related to the sense that Elliot Friedman got in having a conversation with Pettersson. If for some reason you did not know, Friedman hung out with Petey. They chatted about a number of things. And the conversation came out after word broke that Pettersson and the team had sort of reached impasses to a new contract, and they're going to put it off. To, not have it distract over the course of the season. We've been here before. In fact, just a season ago, and that player is no longer a Canuck. Again, different situations. But when you start to hear the conversation that, Elias has with Elliot, it comes along as if he's identifying whether or not the Canucks are the team he wants to actually commit to in the long term. And that's yeah. the scary part. I actually don't know if it's so much about the money and so much as about, can you even afford me and continue to get better?
Yeah. And that's a fair thing to wonder. Obviously, it was very, like, delicately put, both by Petey and Elliot. Like, Elliot was being very easy on Petey, but, you know, understandably, given the sort of situation, you know, saying, kind of feeding him the answer, oh, you just want to focus on your season, right? And yeah, Pedersen kind of said, oh, I don't know whether I want to sign long or short term. Didn't, you know, put out the possibility that not signing at all, which that was kind of left unsaid. But understandably, it is. Like, that's a distinct possibility. Canucks have got to sort of show some improvement this summer, this year, sorry, and just like by next summer, Petey wants to know whether he can commit his, like, even immediate future to the team, because he's a young player, but he's not, you know, he's on his second contract. Like, he's really got to make a decision, like, whether, like,
well, does
where he wants to play. I mean, he in could. A year's time.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the thing about the Vancouver Canucks is that, you know, there is a strong chance he signs with the team. However, that contract is the get me to UFA and I get paid, and the Canucks lose that fight. The Vancouver Canucks will want some form of term out of restricted free agency, and that's where our PD is less than likely to say sure. Canucks Twitter as it is, I think there's a lot of energy here when you hear the
energy.
Foundation of the franchise is potentially, you know, a target that could be moved. But, you know, as far as the organization is concerned, if they can't afford Pedersen,
yeah,
the value that he provides you, if you were truly going to go and drop that stick of dynamite and blow things up, is significant. But that, you know, to the earlier point you had, you know, shared, which we used to talk about, you know, nonstop every episode, that JT Miller deal is still on the books. Like, a team with a contract like that is not about to rebuild.
Yeah, that's the thing. And
so,
like, as you say, like, this is the foundation of your team. You move mountains to get him to re-sign to a reasonable deal, but despite how much we might say otherwise, the cap is the cap is the cap. Like, you can't, like, this isn't like Man City in the Premier League. This isn't Chelsea. We can't just be hiding money and moving money.
So the legitimate amount of money that they claim to spend is significantly more than the Vancouver Canucks spent, let alone the hiding, moving, and
exactly
other such money.
So yeah, that's just like, you're coming up against the fact that yes, you have JT Miller signed to that $8 million a year deal. You have a few other people signed to some tough deals to look at. So
I brought up the trade part because the moment word hits that PD is a wait and see situation, no rush to sign a deal, and there isn't truly any rush. I mean, whether he signs it now or signs it next offseason matters very little. Well, I guess matters a little bit depending on how his production is, but the other markets around the league were like, oh, hey, I wonder what Petey would look like in our jersey. And I think this is where, if I am the Vancouver Canucks and a team comes knocking on my door and offers me the sun, the stars, and the entire solar system, I have to entertain that conversation, do I not? I don't want to see PD go. Like, I don't. But
yeah, yeah.
But like, let's say the Vancouver Canucks sign PD and they sign on to some, you know, decent money. They still have problems they need to solve and they can't buy their way out of it. Like, this is where, you know, the window that of opportunity that had existed, the previous regime boarded it up. Then the current regime had pulled some of those boards down and proceeded to throw up some bricks and mortar with the JT deal. Now,
infuriating.
You know, there's no window, but could this blow one open?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a weird time as a Canucks fan.
It is. And yeah, obviously, yeah, we see Petey's side of it completely. And he's going to have a better year, I think. And I think he's going to really grow his defensive game. And he'll be in a strong position to sort of negotiate that new deal. But yes, as a Canucks fan, it's scary. I don't think it's any scarier. Like, we're not, like, any more scared than we were before. Like, unless Petey was just like, oh, yeah, I'm desperate to sign another deal. Like, that was just never going to happen, right? Like,
no. And but even then, like, this conversation we're having today was probably not one 2 weeks ago we would have even thought we would have had to touch on. Like, yeah. it's sort of the reality of the situation. The Vancouver Canucks have painted themselves into a very difficult corner to get out of. And the PD deal, or lack thereof, is simply one piece of a giant puzzle where pieces are missing. Like, they sign this and suddenly they're like, oh, the top corner here is, you know, still a problem. There's no more pieces in the box. Well, guess what? It's incomplete. Try again next time. Like, I'm too dumb to figure it out.
Yeah.
But hey, the last regime couldn't do it either. And look at, I'm still podcasting.
Yeah. I wasn't saying agreeing with the fact that you're dumb.
I'm dumb. I can take it.
No, but like, we don't math, bro. So we're not going to try and like,
we math all the time.
But like,
math hard. Math it like it's hot.
3-2 don't go into 4, you know?
Well, they do.
Yeah.
Not it just together. Depends on, you know, how messy the math turns out to be. We'll take ourselves a short break here while we pull out the calculators. You listen to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? That because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Your show notes read, Quinn dominating Canuck social media. Is he being lined up as captain? And I would have agreed with you. Except they're going home to JT's house now.
I know. And, I did want to say that, too. Yeah, I did see that as well. But, and no one's suggesting that they're lining up JT Miller to be, like, co-captain with Quinn Hughes or anything.
What are you talking about? This is a legitimate conversation that is taking place right now, that the Vancouver Canucks will simply operate with multiple captains over the course of the season, of which Quinn Hughes and JT Miller are two of the three.
Oh, again, that is a possibility that they do not name a captain. I will say, like, I just don't think it's an accident that Quinn Hughes is part of this strategy. It helps that he lives like with an NHL playing brother and hockey coach dad, and he's home for the summer and willing to let the Canucks come visit. Like, I'm sure that's, but I think it does afford Quinn Hughes an opportunity to sort of showcase his personality
It does. And I,
and the fact that he might actually have one, which we weren't sure of.
I think he is being shown that there is an opportunity to have that leadership role within the team. I mean, where he is in the past, the team had the quote unquote leaders and, you know, he just did his job. I wasn't on board the Quinn Hughes as captain bus until an episode that a friend of the show, Jay, hung out with me on, where he and I chatted about it. And I'm like, no, are you sure? Because, like, the captain needs to be able to, like, hold the team accountable, like, within the room. Like, they are a, you know, a take charge person. They don't necessarily have to be, you know, bombastic. But that's Quinn. Like, Quinn seems to be more like the, you know, blue collar soldier as opposed to the white collar one. Right. And right. Like, as I think the stereotype is that he works for a living, you know, don't call me, sir. I work for a living. I yet now look at this and wonder if maybe he has been all along. Like, the more I see him talk and converse and how his role has evolved, I see him as a player that, regardless of sort of the type of player that you might be, would say, yeah, I could follow that guy. I'd listen to him. I get what he's saying. Like JT Miller, there are those out there, throw a C on the guy. Deserves it. Plays with heart. Has so many Fs to give. Gives them out for free every night. That style of leadership doesn't always work. Like, just in the context of, you know, organizational behavior, that leader can be very much a problem.
Yeah, and I think a captain has to be two things, right? He has to be captain of the team, and he's publicly the captain of the club. Like, you know... Mm-hmm. JT, even if you do believe in that type of leadership in the room and on the ice, which I would say to give it the best possible airing, use it sparingly. But even if you do believe in that, he's not captain material off the ice. He just isn't. Like, he doesn't have the good, like, public image or public speaking. He doesn't care enough.
And you know what? JT just doesn't give enough.
He doesn't, though. Like, he doesn't care what people think of him. And some of that's
useful. Some would say that's a good thing.
As a hockey player, I would say, yes, that is somewhat useful. As a captain, like, as a public figure, no, I think you do have to care. And you have to care what the fans think, and you have to care what the media, like, are putting out there. You have to really basically put on a face when you don't want to talk to anyone. You have to put on a polite face and go out there and face the music. And Henrik Sedin was great at that. Bo Horvat did that in spades, like, even before he was captain. But JT Miller's never going to be that guy. And I think that's okay. You don't need everyone to be that guy, but you need a few people to do it.
Yeah.
And you need your captain to be one of them. And I do think, yeah, I've warmed to Quinn Hughes. I was more like, don't make PD captain. He doesn't need that.
I don't think he wants it.
Yeah, and I don't think he wants it either. But I was definitely of the opinion I didn't really see many, like, a standout candidate. But more and more, I'm thinking Quinn Hughes is the guy. He's always been very smart, given great interviews. But one-on-one, it does seem like he's speaking up more.
So the JT Miller point, though, there are going to be many that would then tell you, well, what you, Bo Horvat was great, you know, for the organization, but he lost the room. I mean, the rumors are that the room had a significant divide, and Bo Horvat had difficulty bringing those sides or many sides together. Now, apparently, by the end of this last season, those sides had made amends and moved forward. So I get what you're saying as to needing to be a captain that can put on many different hats. And I think the benefit that the Vancouver Canucks had when they had Hank and Danny sort of as those leaders, Hank being the captain, Danny with the bigger A amongst the rest, mm-hmm. was that you had like different styles who filled these sort of various roles. Like the JT yeah. Miller type, that existed in the Vancouver Canucks room as an alternate, right? But you had a guy that this guy paid attention to. And, you know, who would that be? Like, who would JT Miller, you know, pay attention to? I mean, some would suggest, hey, he's a consummate pro, a team guy. He'd listen to Petey. Well, one, Petey, I don't think wants it. And two, I don't know. Like, as much as what rift may or may not have existed, that just doesn't, it's an oil and sort of water relationship there. I think Quinn might be a guy he'd listen to, but now I also wonder, really?
But then I think what you would say as an organization is, if you think there's a guy that leads the room and has the right culture, and there's another guy that won't listen to that, then he's the problem, right? Like,
yeah, well, but that
I know, problem, you know, he's an $8 million problem that you can't just trade away easily. But
let's, you know, you're looking at the Canucks lineup,
the culture, right?
Yeah, like looking at the Canucks lineup. There are three names that potentially could be captain, I think, in all real sense. Miller, Hughes, Petey. Now, yeah. I think we agree. Petey is likely not wanting it, nor would it probably be good for a variety of reasons, one of which he's on the last year of a deal. Two, that leaves Miller and Hughes. If you're to say no to Hughes, I can't see Miller as the captain unless throwing a C on his jersey suddenly makes him a different player. I mean, that could happen, but he doesn't seem the type of guy that would evolve in that way.
I think that's really well put, honestly. Yeah. Like, I think Quinn would evolve and grow under the captaincy. JT Miller's never changing. And
I actually don't know if we as a fan would want him to. Like, I think he is the role he plays when he's good and on his game. That's the role the team needs him to play because there's really no one else.
And like we said, like, there's space for that. I just don't think you make that guy your captain. And just to go back to what you said about, like, Bo Horvat's leadership, it wasn't perfect by any means within the room. This is a market like Vancouver, so you're going to hear the rumors. There'll be stuff that's leaked. But did Bo ever talk about having any issues in the room?
No,
but
no.
Saying Bo, that, but
like that's the thing, it's the many hats.
JT Miller, not a month ago. Like, this place was like, it was a mess of a season. These things happened. It was terrible. And Bo was captain under pretty difficult circumstances. And he probably, had some issues, but he never spoke about them.
Yeah,
he never
and to make it clear, I was happy with Bo Horvat as a captain. I don't feel that Bo Horvat was the problem. I would have been happy if they had signed Bo Horvat. We've talked about that on the show throughout last year. Just that ship has now sailed. Was he the best captain considering who was on the team? Who else would you have thrown the seat on?
Yeah, and he was literally shaped to be captain by the Sedin. So that was always going to happen.
But if it's not the three names we listed,
Who else? I mean, please, if Brock anyone Besser? Has. That's the thing. I do think, by the way, Brock Besser and Connor Garland have the personality, and especially Connor Garland. I think Connor Garland would make a really
that was
good
the wild
captain.
Card pick to me would have been Garland, but I don't know how long his future with the team will happen to be.
Exactly, and that's the same problem with Brock. And I think actually Connor Garland has the temperament and personality to be a really good captain, but it's just not of this team, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I don't think of any team in the current state outside of the one he's on right now. You don't go to somewhere else.
No, you don't.
unless you're, you know,
just in an alternate universe.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say like Brock Besser was like, yeah, but no, here's the guy, and it would have been Connor Garland. You stole the words out of my mouth. Beyond that, there really isn't anyone else. Like some might say, oh, Tyler Myers. Okay, here's another guy who knows if he's actually gonna be a Vancouver Canucks jersey at the start of the season. Myers is captain. Like, it just doesn't occur to me to be that.
Like, he's the right age. He's kind of the right temperament. He's a bit abrupt. And I honestly worry what would come out of his mouth sometimes. Like, I do worry that he would not be good for a market like Vancouver. And I'm just going to put that as politely as possible. In the same way that I don't think that Demko would be good. Beyond the whole goalie sailed, captain thing.
That ship sailed. Luongo, he took that ship to sea. It sank in rough waters. Thankfully, he made it back to shore.
Yeah, but there's some views that Demko holds. And I'm kind of thinking Tyler Myers might also hold that I would be worried about. But it's got to be like Quinn, if it's anyone, right? Like, that's our kind of view.
It's Quinn or no one.
Yeah.
That's my take.
I did listen to Friends of the Show, Canucks Conversation, and they're wondering if Canucks got a home opener just so they can name Quinn captain.
Using the new big Jumbotron that's been installed that, oh, by the way, is the reason the Drake concert got postponed.
That's wild. Just like Canucks can't do anything right. Just like they're very meager improvements to the arena, which includes making
the meager that screen, like the electronic presentation display, is like next level stuff. I wouldn't call it meager, but to have done the work in such a way that it left you with no time to ensure that Drake can perform on Monday.
Drake.
Right. But to whoever's credit, Drake can reschedule that Monday concert to Wednesday and cross fingers that Tuesday will go off without a hitch.
Yeah. I mean, it's just bonkers. The king of Canada.
I hear Drake can attract a few people to a barn. I mean,
And what I mean by meager is that, like, really the effects of their, I'm sure it looks nice and I'm sure it's going to be good, but like, replace all the seats.
That's phase three. Floor.
Yeah.
That's phase three. Phase two was the production and crazy elevator stairs to let you into the super duper expensive lounge to buy rink food. Higher quality rink food, but rink food.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of mad how long we've waited for them, and then they're just like, okay. Oh yeah, we've got new seats for the super rich people.
So I mean, I've been thinking about this. I agree the seats need to be, you know, redone. But I don't know if we would actually see the seats just sort of like reupholstered, new seats, whatever, come in. I genuinely believe they'll look at this as an opportunity to increase the number of seats that the stadium can actually hold. And there are ways to do that does not, quote unquote, enhance the experience.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like
the airlines have been doing it for eons. I don't imagine that the Vancouver Canucks would pass up this opportunity to squeeze a few more dollars out of the gate.
I mean, you're right, but we do need new seats and we need new floors. Like, that's just...
What are you talking about? The floors are fine. I mean, you can just follow the worn-out path to the washroom and know exactly where your feet should stand when you're in there, because those before you for the last 30 years, actually, I don't know, it's been 30 years, maybe 20, have marked the territory well.
I know, but like the beer stains are just like historic at this point. Yes,
I've gone to some old bars where that adds character to the establishment. Are you telling me that the beer stains do not provide character to the Raj?
They provide something.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to go back of where we went off the rails, but like Canucks couldn't get a home opener for their 50th season when they were naming a new captain and like having this huge ceremony. It was a whole deal. They couldn't get a home opener for that season. If they've got a home opener for this season just by sheer dumb luck, like I don't
think I was gonna say it's not anything special, like you know,
to do with anything.
Yeah, Faber and Quads, those kids got some hustle, and it's possible they know something that you and I don't. But to suggest that the Vancouver Canucks may have gotten this to name a captain, oh heck to the no! This team can't, you know, get anything out of the league.
I doubt it. Yeah,
yeah, they might use it as a coincidence, but sure, but no, no.
Yeah.
If anything, hey, we've got this new you know, production experience. Can we get our home game to show it off? Like that might be it. But now that we know it doesn't work. I mean, they'll hire it out in the preseason, right?
Yeah. Ugh. I don't know why I'm thinking of this, just thinking of, like, bad preseason experiences. I remember going to a preseason, and it was a season they started doing 3-on-3 overtime. So they, like, played it in the preseason to sort of try it out. So I had to watch the Canucks lose to San Jose in regulation.
And then lose in overtime.
And then I was just like, why am I still here? Like, yeah. It was brutal.
Good to see him lose twice.
Like, let me leave.
That's good. You're a committed fan. You never leave until that final whistle has gone.
I mean, it's true. I hate leaving early. Like, I just really, really hate it. And I've been made to leave early by a few people in sporting events, and I just hate it. You always miss something.
I wouldn't be that person. And I've sat through some horrible experiences right to the final whistle because I paid good money to suffer. We're going to take ourselves another brief break and then drop a few F's ourselves.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the f*** here then. Yeah. Okay, see ya.
Oh. It's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you an explanation about it. I can't.
You out of hand.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
Sports sucks. I mean, this isn't anything new, and if you've been listening to our show, it is something we share on a regular basis. And that itself sucks because sports makes it easy for us to hate it. And I'm using the term sports generally because there's a lot that has gone on in the past few weeks. And again, it's not to make light of a lot more that has gone on prior to that. But let's start off with the Women's World Cup down in Australia, New Zealand. If you happen to be a fan of Team Canada, unfortunately, they bowed out early. Canadian soccer is going through some issues of its own, and the Federation itself needs to get its shiznit in order. But that's not what we're here to talk about. No, the team from Spain, which had issues on its own going into the World Cup, between the players and the coach and the organization, overcame this adversity and found themselves not only in a final against a very, tough side from England, but were able to overcome that adversity in that final to win. This should be a shining moment of not only the success that this Spanish women's side had in this tournament. It should have been a spotlight on a tournament that showcased how good the women's game happens to be. We saw teams qualify who years ago would have been just rolled over if they had happened to be included in a group. This is the maturity of the game. Like, just to use a hockey, you know, reference here, we're seeing some, you know, what would be known as lesser nations starting to, you know, do some pretty cool things against the likes of a Team Canada, Team Sweden, Team Finland. And the president of the Spanish Football Federation, as is custom, is on the stage to help congratulate the players that have represented the federation in the country, and decides it was the perfect opportunity, in his own words, to embrace the emotion by kissing, without consent, one of the players. Now, what has happened since then? Well, one, the player in question, I believe it's Jennifer Hermosa.
Yeah, Jenny Hermosa, yeah.
Has said, like, this was not done with any consent. I do not approve. It happened. My reaction when it happened was what? And if you were, you know, like, this is the weird thing. They're somehow suggesting that she's being manipulated. There's video of her in the dressing room.
Yeah.
When other players are, like, looking at this, and she's like, I did not like this. I did not like that. Like,
yeah,
this is not influence. This is now the, like, what has happened.
Was the sort of forced joint statement that was released, not written, by Jenny Hermosa, where it was written to give indication that she was fine with it, but
which she is
she's not herself.
And then the president of the federation has now, you know, in front of a room just full of men, getting a standing ovation. I'm going to fight this, and I'm going to take legal recourse, because this is, and like, his words were like, that it's the vigilante feminists that are the problem. Like, I'm so sorry. You've obviously lost the plot long ago. Like, you did a bad thing. Your apology was, yeah, but it was okay. And what makes this even sketchier is you've put FIFA in a good light, because they've suspended you. FIFA, as an organization, is problematic to the core. They've got issues. And they're the ones who are like, no, dude, you've crossed the line. You're suspended for 90 days while we investigate.
I mean, and they're having to do that because the Spanish Federation is, yeah, refusing to stand up for its players.
They're backing the guy.
They're backing him. They've threatened to pull out of every, like, every Spanish club, men's and women's, pulling out of UEFA competitions in order to keep the guy in charge. Like, yeah. It's awful. This, and, like,
the fact that this is even possible is because misogyny has such a powerful grip on sport.
Yeah. And let's even go back to the adversity you're talking about that the Spanish team had to go through, because that's not without its patriarchal overtones. The Spanish team in January, I believe, basically, it was after the Euros last year, so basically said, we need a change of leadership. Mm-hmm. We do not like our coach. And there were several players backing this. Players were then, yeah, and they were forced to either contritely apologize for this, or they wouldn't be allowed back on the team. So we've got this team that's, you know, people being forced back into work.
Three of the 15 were on the roster.
Yeah. Or these new players, and, like, who are forced into that situation under a coach that no one respects. And there's, you know, lots of allegations about him being very controlling.
But Anna, they won the World Cup. It's all part of the process.
Yeah. Honestly, I hate the narrative that men's coaches and women's soccer just, like, are somehow worthy of respect just by being there. Like, there are so many incredible men's coaches in women's football. Jonas Eidevall at Arsenal, for example, I think he's brilliant. But just, like, if you look at Phil Neville coaching the England women's team previously, like, he got the job with basically, you know, sort of qualifications or experience, and the fact that he's a man seems to be enough. And, yeah, that's, they just...
Because men know sport.
Men know sport. If you're a professional footballer, you must be able to coach.
Mm-hmm. It's the science.
Yeah. So I'll say that much. So there was already a pretty bad situation. So this is the environment that that women's sport is in, and where is UEFA in all this? Completely silent. The president, UEFA president, refused to go to the women's final. Like, and they've been
did not hear that.
Yeah.
Like, again, CONCACAF, problematic federation, but Montigliani would be present if a CONCACAF side is in the final.
Yeah, and it's there were two European sides in the final, and UEFA president was not there. Just, like, I just want you to remember, like, and I'm talking to the listeners here, just, like, anytime we've seen the narrative of protecting women in sport, usually when it comes to trans athletes, these people that are saying that do not care about women's sport whatsoever. And you can see that now when they are so silent over issues like this. And yeah, I just think it's the fact that they're trying to argue whether it happened when it's literally on camera is just, it's mind boggling.
You also included in the rundown a situation I was not familiar with regarding Manchester United.
Yeah. So that's another whole thing. And it is tangentially tied to the Women's World Cup because if you didn't know, Mason Greenwood, formerly of Manchester United, last year was accused, was the year before, 18 months ago, I believe, was accused of, via social media, of assaulting his girlfriend. And if you're on social media at the time, you probably heard the audio clip. You probably saw some photos, and that was very disturbing. The charges ended up being dropped earlier this year, and that's key. You know, this did not go to trial. He was not found not guilty, which, again, is different than innocent. But the charges were dropped. He was not cleared. The charges were dropped, mainly because of the alleged victim pulling her statement. There can be so many reasons behind that. But basically, it was discovered by The Athletic that Manchester United was sort of preparing the way for Mason Greenwood to return to the team. And, you know, there were leaked documents about, you know, what press appearances Mason Greenwood could make, what organizations might be open to speaking to him, what organizations might be neutral, and what organizations might be hostile. So preparations were being made for that to happen. United released a statement saying they hadn't decided yet. There were stories about them waiting for the women to come back from the World Cup so they could be consulted, which of course opened the Manchester United women, three of whom were in the final, I believe, opened them up to a huge amount of abuse online. So it was a mess. United have since made a U-turn and announced that though they find that Mason Greenwood has not committed the crimes of which he was accused. How do they know that? I don't know. Apparently they have better investigative powers than the police. But that he will not be returning. And the way they've handled the situation is so disappointing. The way social media has responded is disappointing, but not shocking. But yeah, I think anyone who's being a female sports fan is really tough, but it's been especially tough when you see all the responses to that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard any of this. Now, granted, I see United and I just turned my ears off. While you're describing to me, it just seems outright nuts. Like, I if I am United and, you know, find myself in a professional relationship in the sense of a team and a player with a player who, you know, I don't know if you really are a player we want around anymore.
Yeah.
you find a way to exit that player. I mean, the transfer window, whether or not there's value to be had because other teams may not want that player either, you send that player elsewhere. Like, you don't come out and say, oh, not guilty, because you're right. Yeah, their investigators have not, may not have uncovered anything more or less, but that doesn't prove innocence. And for anyone here, it's like, oh, you left-wing nut jobs, you know, the basis of our country is you're innocent until proven guilty. Yeah, in a court of law, the state cannot come after you and presume you to be guilty until such time as they're able to prove that in a court of law. This is the court of public opinion. There are no such rules. And in this particular case, if I'll use a Vancouver Canucks, you know, comparison, if any player in the organization were to have been accused of this, and it happens to be on the roster today, I would hope that they would be off the roster tomorrow. I don't, you know what? Go learn your lesson elsewhere.
We know that to be the case. I just think, like, even if you're looking at a really cynical eye, bringing your team into disrepute should be a pretty low bar to clear, right?
You gotta understand there's some fans that would disagree with us and it would hurt the bottom line of the organization, and we have to show loyalty.
Yeah. I mean, that was a troubling thing they kept going over about how Mason Greenwood had played with the organization since he was 7.
Loyalty. That says something. That speaks loudly.
To me, it speaks loudly of the kind of men that are being raised in the game. And the lack of education they're receiving with regards to consent and all issues related to that. And let me tell you something. If Mason Greenwood was not a fantastic footballer, and he is fantastic, they would have cut ties long ago. They wouldn't have cared what would happen with the organization. If he was a mediocre player, none of this would have happened.
Yeah. Speaking of consent, there's also a hockey related situation. Logan Mailloux has been deemed to be eligible to return to play in the American Hockey League and National Hockey League. If you don't recall his situation, during the early days of the pandemic, he happened to be playing in Sweden and had a relationship with a young woman in which he decided to take pictures without her consent of them consummating the relationship. He then takes these pictures that he took without consent and starts showing others, which tell her, the woman that was in these pictures, that this happened. She goes to the police. He is then charged and fined for his actions. Now, the Montreal Canadiens, being an upstanding organization here in the country of Canada, had deemed that Logan Mailloux is a good kid who made a bad mistake, and they were going to work with him along as part of the journey to help, you know, resurrect this poor man's, career-threatening issues and help him become a better person. And allegedly, that's happened. He apparently has gone to therapy. He has apparently done everything that has been asked of him. And he is, by some accounts, a better person as a result. And that may be true. He was a young person who did a very horrible thing. But the lenses to which this has been used throughout, oh, this young man, woe is us to cast him aside for making a mistake. Everyone deserves second chances. What about the young woman? No, look at her. She isn't losing a potential career in the NHL, but this young man,
Yeah. To me, it's just the fact that they treat these young men with hockey talent as deserving of a career in the NHL. And if they make mistakes, they have the chance to rehabilitate that, but they're starting from the place of they automatically deserve this career just by being good at hockey, when really it's like they should be earning this. And this is, again, we're starting from a point of he was like, you know, all the innocent until found guilty. He was found guilty. Well, he was convicted.
And this is what's, you know, you're right. But also to me, like when someone says, oh, well, he made a mistake. No, if you want to call it mistake, you want to demonstrate that there's a very, you know, low sense of severity to this. He made many mistakes. Took pictures without consent. Mistake number one. Shares pictures taken without consent with others. Mistake number two. Like
that's like, yeah, like, it's not to be minimized, like no, either but, of those things. And yeah, and we're not, by the way, like I'm not saying this player, like no matter what he does in his life, will always be fundamentally evil because of those acts that he committed. I don't believe that, and I do believe that people can change. What I don't believe is that anyone in this situation acted in good faith. I don't believe the Habs acted in good faith when they drafted Logan Mailloux, despite him trying to withdraw from the draft. I don't believe they acted in good faith when they had no answer as to how they were going to help him change, quote unquote, but had a statement ready to go as soon as he was drafted. I don't believe the NHL acted in good faith when Gary Bettman said that he would take it all on a case-by-case basis, because the track record shows that them being dealing
Gary
with
is a fair and impartial person.
Yeah. Their track record when it comes to sexual assault is very bad. And I do believe that they are valuing these young men and their hockey talent, and I'm including the whole NHL, the Chicago Blackhawks organization as a whole at the time. They value that over the young woman and like women's rights to privacy.
You talking they, about? They totally, you know, care about women. They celebrate women in the game.
Yeah. I mean, they certainly value it over Carl Beach.
Yeah.
And
I'm not trying to make light of this. Like, I'm.
No, we're just trying to deal with it and make sense of it. But let's be honest, gay men, and because Carl Beach was sexually assaulted by a man, and was seen as like part of that community by association, as thought of as less than. Women are thought of as less than, and their right to safety, women's right to safety, is just so much less important than hockey.
Yeah. If there is a listener at this point who's like, still, you're agitated that we're even talking about this issue, I have no apologies, because this is what we do. We don't shy away from these tough topics, but then have to ask yourself, if you're agitated because you're like, well, everyone deserves a second chance. And you know, by all accounts, Logan has improved himself. Great. Let me tell you a story. When I was in high school, a young man, in comparison, old, because I was in high school, comes to school and he's on stage. And the first thing he says is, when I was a little bit older than you, I went out, was drinking, got into a car, I killed someone. And everyone's like, whoa, right? Because it's shock talk. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it cost me this, it cost me this, it cost me this, it cost me this. But to be honest, that's easy. All of that easy. The person who died cost them everything. Their family cost them everything. He's like, I got it easy. And someone said, you know, like he was telling about how he deserves nothing. Everything he does is in service to pay the penance that can never be repaid. And someone said, well, you know, everyone deserves a second chance. He's like, why? Why do I get a second chance? I took all chances away. Like, at what point in time is there this fairness? Now, the interesting thing about this conversation is that he came to my school and went to other schools to say, this is what I did. I made a mistake, is what it was called. It wasn't a mistake. I killed someone. At what point in time does killing someone, based on the decisions that you make, a mistake?
Yeah.
To me, why is Logan not going out to schools, forfeiting his career in the NHL, to go and say, hey, here's what I did?
You know what I will say is, like, I don't believe that everyone deserves a second chance. Second chances have to be earned. And perhaps Logan's done enough to earn that. Like, he's maybe said the right things, gone to do the right things. But he got that second chance without earning it. He got drafted to the NHL. Just, like, he got to keep playing.
He said for sorry. His
hockey team without any prison sentence. Yeah. He got drafted to the NHL. Like, he did not earn that second chance. Maybe he has now. But the fact that he just got given one so cheaply. And do I believe that the NHL is in any position to be a place for rehabilitating? Like, people that have made these kinds of mistakes, not
look, Anna. He got fined significantly. It was just under $2,000 US. You know how long it takes a young kid to pay that off?
Not very long.
I mean, does he actually have an NHL contract? Like, was he able to sign one before this decision?
No.
Okay, so the moment he signs one, it's paid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just, this isn't an attack on Logan Mailloux. It's an attack on the institution, I guess, the patriarchy in sports and, the atmosphere in which this kind of attitude festers. Because, like, what Logan Mailloux did, that didn't come out of nowhere, right? Like, he's grown up playing hockey all his life. Mason Greenwood played in the Man United Academy since he was 7. This is the kind of attitude that arises from that.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. If anything, the lesson as to which it serves to educate those younger is a horrible one. It doesn't improve upon what will occur in the future. It reinforces everything that continues to be wrong. And what is okay? And what is permissible?
Before we see all the articles, because we will see them, I've already seen a kind of horrible one in the Montreal Gazette. We're going to see stuff about him being rehabilitated because he has a good season. You don't earn redemption on the ice. Like, that is not how you...
you're talking about the players are going to hit him a little bit harder. It's kind of like, you know, being in a prison yard. Toughen him up. Make him pay his due.
Yeah. It's just so dispiriting. And, like, maybe Logan Mailloux is a better person. But, like, you know, campaign for, like, talk to your teammates about consent. Campaign for sexual assault workshops to be standardized across, like, the league. That's how you show you've changed.
Yeah, you showcase, you use yourself and your situation that you created as the poster for why things need to improve.
Yeah.
Like, you pay, to me, there is a penance that gets paid when you use yourself as the example of what is wrong.
Because, that woman did not have a choice whether her image was made public.
Yeah.
He does, and he has a way to control that, and I'd like to see him use it.
There was actually a comment I had saw on Twitter where someone's like, but the images weren't public. Somehow, when you share something with someone else, like, that's not in private anymore. In private is between you and the person which consents to provide it to you. That's private. And if, like, you mutually consent to include others, that can in turn be private. But guess what? You've increased the chances that private becomes public. Public is when parties who are not consent or have been consented to be included are involved. I don't understand how that is so hard to interpret and understand.
Yeah. What the commenter is really saying is I didn't get to see them.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyhow, in 2 weeks' time when we're back, I really hope we get nothing. I hope it is uneventful 2 weeks.
Don't have anything to rant about. And the general state of the world is pretty terrible, but if there's nothing specific to hockey, if there's nothing specific to sports to talk about, then the F word will be very happy. We don't like doing this. We have to.
And I can't speak to other podcasts, especially in sort of the Smila sphere. I don't know if others touch on these issues, and I feel if they're not, maybe they should. And if the desire is like, well, you know, we don't want to be political, it's not our jam. Hey, I challenge you to consider all the reasons that are holding you back from having these tough conversations. Like, if it's not your jam, make it your jam. If it's too political, it's not political. Like, I don't understand how that's political in any way, shape, or form. There's a lot of things that shouldn't be political, but this is not.
In the sense that everything is.
Yes, but like the point being, it happens. It exists in a game that we talk about. And let's not be naive to not think that it exists within the context of the team we all talk about. It has. Like, that's legit. So how do you not talk about that? Mm-hmm. Anna, any final words of wisdom?
I would say if you are pro women in sports and want to protect women in sports, have a think about what that really means.
I can't do any better than that. Follow us on social media, whatever the platforms happen to be in any given day of the week, although we're not on Threads or Blue Sky or Mastodon.
Yet.
We're at the C4 Podcast and most of those that we are on. You can find our Discord, discord.io/C4Podcast. And you can go to our website, c4podcast.com, where you can see our entire back catalog on a broken site with a widget that works. But on behalf of Anna, A4Say03, myself, Chris at Lightforce, signing off this episode with... We out.